Running a business shouldn't feel like surviving a software group project. One app for accounting, another for inventory, another for sales, and somehow none of them talk to each other. That's where Odoo comes in, an all-in-one business management software that brings every part of your business together, from sales and accounting to inventory and marketing, all in one powerful platform. No messy integrations, no bouncing between tabs, and best of all, no spreadsheets. Stop managing software and start managing your business with one unified system. Try for free today at odoo.com/iHeartRadio. That's odoo.com/iHeartRadio.
It's called soccer.
It's called football.
Soccer.
Football.
Domino's best deal ever lets you get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99.
We can agree on that.
Yeah, fully.
So, pineapple? Don't ruin it. Get any pizza, including stuffed crust, with any toppings for $9.99. Finally, something everyone can get behind.
And if the rest disagree, that's between them and Domino's. Which means the only thing left to fight over is who's ordering.
Domino's.
Prices higher for some locations. Excludes XL and specialty pizzas. Select this offer from 6:15 to 7:26. Online only. Size availability varies by crust type. Max 7 toppings. 6 for pan and New York style crust. Minimum purchase required for delivery. Prices, participation, delivery area, and charges may vary.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks. Like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.
Today on The Grave Talks, we continue our conversation with Doug Owen about his book, The Unholy Silence. There's a lot of people right now wondering, why didn't you just move? Because this is a really bad environment for your kids. But you had gone through a really difficult financial loss. Like, you were pretty ruined after the other house before you moved into this one. Was it also a matter of moving was financially going to be pretty difficult to do?
Yeah, financially, it would take us a year or so to recover. You know, I mean, in Idaho, the landlords can raise the rent with a 30-day notice, and they can raise it to any amount. And the people who scammed us took control of the house I was living in, and they raised the rent $1,000 a month.
Oh, my God.
So by month three, it was like $4,000. And, you know, we were advised by an attorney to put it in escrow, but we had to put that money into escrow and hold it there until the courts decided what happened. So we were fine. And then, of course, attorney's fees. So we didn't really have an option to move. And this house, I felt, was our blessing. And, you know, me being a father and a fix-it and somewhat of a mechanic, I fix problems. I didn't want to believe that I couldn't fix this problem.
Yeah.
So I took it as a personal challenge to protect my family, to step up, to arm myself with, you know, these weapons of Christianity. And, you know, it became a battle of wills, essentially. My will against whatever was in this house.
And it really, I feel like when you live in an environment like that every day, it does kind of change, and how can it not change how you look at everything? Because there's this sense of impending doom, but it also affects, it can affect you mentally, and it can affect different people in different ways. And it seemed like it really affected your wife in a different way than you. Like, you dealt with this very differently.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, she dealt with it in her own ways. But, you know, at the time, my wife, well, to be honest, wasn't a very good person. You know, she had her own troubles and issues with things and honesty, you know, fidelity. She had difficulty with that stuff. So later, obviously, it was revealed that, you know, she may have been a catalyst for this to happen with her fascination with the Catholic Church and the demonic possessions and the horror movies and those things, you know, online as well with exorcism videos that she would watch, you know, true crime exorcism videos, things like that. She would delve into the paranormal and the mysterious and look at those things. But yeah, she was, you know, she wasn't a very honest person at the beginning. And, you know, obviously there was some infidelity at the time. And as we started to fracture as a family, I didn't really count on her for very much support at all.
Was she like that before moving into the house, or did this kind of obsession with the exorcism stuff, did that intensify once you moved in?
It did intensify. And yeah, she had some behavioral quirks, you know, before we had moved in there, with honesty and, you know, some of the truth telling things. And yeah, you know, there was some things I was discovering that she was concealing from me. She was very good at hiding things and mismanaging money and, you know, doing some things like that were just unscrupulous. But yeah, you know, it showed definitely some character flaws in her. And she wasn't a very honest person. So it was difficult to get the truth out of her and what, you know, what was happening. But yeah, it was very much just kind of me running around trying to protect everybody.
And can you really do it, number one, do it by yourself? Because when you have someone like her in the house who also seems to kind of be, I don't know if encouraging it is the right word, but she's certainly not trying to shut any of it down.
Correct. I would agree with that. That's very accurate. And yeah, as I learned, I couldn't do it alone. And of course, in my inexperience and arrogance and pride as a father, a protector, well, I'm going to take this thing on. This thing's not going to beat me. I've got the Catholic Church behind me. Yeah, and that it just didn't seem to matter. It didn't seem to matter to these things. And in fact, it seemed to aggravate and irritate them even more.
That has to be a serious feeling of helplessness. Because if the one thing you know that and you've been told can help isn't helping, and what do you do? Because even if you could afford to move out, I would be really afraid that doesn't end it. Because it seems to know you, and it seemed to, like, almost personal. Not just a haunting the house sort of thing. It was more directed at you and your family.
Absolutely.
So how do you get rid of that? What do you do?
You know, it seemed to learn as it went on. And as far as I know, whatever these things were, this thing, can't read your mind. Or it would have easily, you know, known my weaknesses and just, you know, checkmated me sooner. But it took a long time for it to really affect me to where I stepped off the battlefield. It tried different things. The windows, the doors, the imitation of my wife walking across the hardwood floor in the afternoon when the doors are locked and she was not home. We all heard it. Me and the children downstairs heard her walk across the hardwood floor and close the door.
And you know, when you hear something like that, that's how it sounds when she comes home.
Absolutely. The kids looked at each other and said, "Mom's home," at the same time. Of course, then they went into jinx, double jinx, triple jinx. And I, you know, I was like, "All right, girls, you know, go up and see Mom." They went upstairs and nobody was there. Door was locked. No car in the driveway. Told them, "Okay, well, let's go back downstairs and watch our movie." And I didn't explain it. I didn't entertain it. I just kind of needed some time to examine what had just happened, since we all three heard it. On our way down, I heard a noise in the garage, and I opened the garage door. And the electric sander was plugged in and thrown underneath the project car I was working on. So it was kind of a strange disruption. Something was trying to get my attention.
Yeah, because that right there is almost like an evil exclamation point. You know, it's like, that just happened. But look, and like, because that seems really evil to me. The electric sander is turned on by itself.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, some of the other things to come, you know, the windows and the doors opening up. And when I had to call the police, yeah, And they come in and tell me that, you know, hey, every one of your mirrored surfaces is broken. And not just the mirrors, you know, that you look into, but the dental mirrors, the shaving mirrors, the makeup compact mirrors, they're all broken. It's kind of unnerving. You know, when you go to the police, they can't help. You go to the church, they can't help. Your friends, you know, kind of either think you're crazy, mm-hmm. you know, and unless they see it, and close friends of ours obviously experience these things. But, you know, like I said, you know, there's a certain shame that comes along with a haunting and any type of affliction, really. You know, when you're disabled, you hide it. When you're mentally ill, you know, you conceal it. You know, if you're depressed or have an addiction, again, you know, you don't share that with others. And it's the same way with a haunting. There's a certain shame that comes along with it, as if you did something mm-hmm. wrong.
I really understand that. I felt like that as a kid. Like, I didn't want anyone to come to my house because I live in a haunted house and I don't want them to find out. Although several right. of them knew, like my best friend definitely knew. But I didn't want to be the girl who lived in the haunted house. And that's why I really felt bad for your poor girls.
Yeah, exactly. And you know, after a while, it just became dismissive. We just didn't discuss. We never got together, sat at the table and said, okay, everybody get a pad of paper and a pen and let's talk about this and figure this out. We never did that. We never really sat down and organized as a family to say, okay, let's see what's going on here and explain these experiences. That didn't happen. We basically just kind of took each situation as it happened, where, you know, I decided the best course of action against it. And most of the time it was just trying to ignore it, thinking, okay, well, maybe if we ignore it, it'll go away. And of course it didn't.
Have you thought about having that conversation now with the girls much older? We did that when I think the youngest of us, we were all adults. I think my youngest sister might have just been 18 when we had the conversation. But all five of us kids and our dad sat down and had a really interesting conversation about that house.
Yeah, I've discussed it with my daughters, you know, and received their insights. And, you know, they recall some of the things that happened, some of the things they don't remember, but
which is probably good.
Yeah, probably good. But you know, my youngest daughter at the time, her Elmo doll, you know, had told her to grab the butcher's knife and kill us in our sleep.
Oh.
And you know, she had no idea what a butcher's knife was at the time, and didn't even know if we had one. And, you know, she'd experienced things like that were traumatizing. But, you know, it seemed to target my oldest daughter. That seemed to be the target of whatever these entities were.
Did you end up kind of resolving it in a way by kind of giving up? Or because, I mean, obviously you moved.
Yeah, I did move eventually.
But was it just, I can't anymore?
It was a, you know, oh, wow, okay. So you're going to play dirty, you're going to hit me and hurt something I care about, you know, most in this world. So it took a while for it to learn what would make me stop fighting against it.
Mm-hmm.
And as soon as I made that decision to, okay, I'm taking down the crucifixes. Okay, I'm going to put away the holy water. All right, I'm not going to say the Lord's Prayer every night or walk around the house sprinkling every corner with holy water and reciting, you know, Catholic prayers. As soon as I did that, it de-escalated the situation.
That would be a weird feeling because it's like, okay, I'm taking down the protections. Because even if it's not really protecting you, there's a certain mental thing that would go along with that. Like, I am protecting myself by doing these rituals and doing these things. And then once you take that away, what is going to protect you from that? And how open are you leaving yourself?
Yeah. And at that time, it was almost as if, you know, a dog rolls over and exposes their belly. It was that type of situation. And I felt that whatever these things were, they understood that, okay, I'm giving up, because the more, you know, the more icons I put up, the more religious paraphernalia, the worse it got, the more frequent the issues, the more violent the confrontations became. It was interesting when, you know, a Big River Paranormal came in to investigate. Several things happened. You know, my daughter's guitar ended up in the office chair spinning, you know, right in front of us. 10 to 15 degrees colder in the corner with their laser temperature readers. And they collected several EVPs, and then a quarter fell from the ceiling and landed on the investigator's laptop there. It was really kind of harrowing. So it was Marie Johnson, and landed right on their laptop. No explanation, no idea where it would have come from downstairs. The ceiling didn't have coins glued to it or anything. It was just kind of strange. But whatever these things were, they were multiple entities, some of them violently threatening us on the EVP. You can hear it clearly telling us that they didn't want us there and it was going to kill us. So it was kind of unnerving to hear that.
Kinda.
It was very, yeah. Very unnerving. Yeah.
Well, and once you hear that, is that kind of when you knew you have to go?
Yeah, I started making preparations to move right away. And at the time, my wife at the time had, mismanaged again, funds, you know, with the checking account and things like that. So she had gotten us into another situation where we ended up getting behind on rent again. I have no idea what she was doing with the money. It was one of those situations where we got into a situation where we were going to have to move, and the option to buy the house was no longer on the table because of the financial failure, and also because we didn't want to purchase a home that we just could not find peace in.
No, because I was going to ask you that. Even if financially that wouldn't have happened and you were in good shape financially, would you have actually gone through with it?
You know, I probably, well, you know, that's difficult to say. I mean, I'd like to think that I wouldn't. But at the same time, again, you know, young dad, family man, you know, would arrogance allow me to think I could defeat this thing?
True.
Not after the final incident that really happened and the escalation. I completely threw in the towel and then knew it. I stepped off the battlefield completely. It was a checkmate situation where I was not going to sacrifice my daughter for whatever, this thing's intentions were.
That was bad. Do you want to talk about that?
Absolutely. It was the most terrifying thing that's ever happened to me. And, I've never been scared like that before in my life, but, it was interesting. To this day, my daughter still doesn't remember the incident happening. The last thing she remembers is being at school, getting on her backpack, getting ready to walk home. But I'd had two friends come over, and we were going to do a Christmas party. So back in the day, we would burn CDs and put our music on there. My daughter had come home from school and came downstairs and said, "Hey, Dad, I was going to cook some of those cheap Totino's pizzas that we got from Costco." I said, "Okay, go ahead." And she asked the two friends, Meg and Josie, would you like one? And they both said, "Yeah." And she asked me, "Well, do you want one, Dad?" I said, "No, I'm good. But by the way, this is Josie. You've never met her before. This is Meg's friend, Josie." And I made the introductions. And she said, "Hi," and went upstairs to cook the pizzas. So she came down about 45 minutes later. And she handed Meg her pizza. I handed Josie her pizza and then began to walk towards me. And I stopped her right there. I said, "Oh, no, honey, I'm good. I don't need a pizza. I'm good." And I was sitting at my desk, and Josie and Meg were sitting crisscross leg on the ground opposite each other, going through some CDs and things, going through some music. My daughter continued to walk towards me as if she couldn't hear me. And I told her again, I raised my voice. I said, "Hey, you know, Beth, I'm good. I don't need a pizza. No, thank you. Take it back upstairs, please." She continued to walk towards me. She got to the desk where I was sitting and leaned kind of diagonally, put it in front of me where my keyboard was, and came about 2 inches from my face and looked at me in the eyes and smiled with a toothless grin that sent chills up my spine. And I looked into her eyes and I knew that wasn't my daughter. Now, and the basis of this, my kids were very well-mannered. I had to barely raise my voice and they were almost in tears because, you know, I'm loud. And, you know, it's deep voice and scares them. But I never had to really yell that much to get them to do what they were supposed to do. They were good kids for the most part. They listened to me. They never disobeyed. And then they would never, ever embarrass us in front of company, especially meeting somebody new that day. So my daughter would never do that. And that's when I screamed. And for a moment, I was paralyzed. I couldn't move. I felt the energy drain out. But I felt also revulsion. I did not want whatever that thing was in front of me to touch me at all costs. I was terrified. So I screamed at the top of my lungs, and I screamed loud enough to shake the windows. Josie dropped her pizza. It startled her so badly. And I screamed at that thing to get away from me, or I was going to kill it. And it didn't blink.
Oof.
It didn't move. Now, keep in mind, this is me at full volume, everything I had, as loud as I can, 2 inches away from her face, screaming, threatening. Didn't blink, didn't move, didn't change facial expressions. Continued that sickeningly sweet, toothless grin and looked at me. And then after about probably 5 to 10 seconds, which seemed like an eternity, and I'm in a rolling office chair and my back is to my desk, so I don't really have anywhere to go. I can't flee, I can't back up, you know, I'm kind of pinned. And I wanted to flee, I wanted to get out, but I didn't want that thing to touch me. So after about 10 to 15 seconds, 5 to 10, it just, I don't know, it seemed forever. She stood up slowly, backed away, but continued to make the eye contact. Turned for a moment, walked towards the door between Josie and Meg. Got to the threshold to the other room, turned around, looked at me again. Widened the smile as if that were even possible. Looked at me again, and then slowly walked through the downstairs living room area to the stairs. And once again, reaching for this stair, the handrail, looked again at me, one more sickening smile. I was terrified. I was petrified. I could not move. Josie, of course, was terrified. She dropped her pizza and heard me threaten my children, you know, or my child, and screamed at her face. And she was going to call 911. Meg urged her, okay, stop. Something's wrong, Josie. Don't call the police. I know his kids. His kids would never disobey or act like that. Something is very wrong. And I said, look, whatever that thing was, that was not my daughter.
Yeah, were they able to see the look on her face, or that was all directed at you?
They could see everything. They saw everything I saw. They were shocked just as much as I was.
Wow.
And, you know, after about 20 minutes, I was convinced to go upstairs. And at first, Josie said, well, you've got to go up and see if she's okay. That's terrifying. I was like, I'm terrified. I don't want to go upstairs. We went upstairs and we found her fast asleep in her bed, passed out. We all stood in her bed, in her bedroom, over her. And I shook her awake. I said, hey, wake up. I was like, what the fuck was that downstairs? What is going on? I was terrified. And she woke up confused, disoriented. And she didn't remember meeting Josie. She didn't remember cooking the pizzas and where she was for 40 minutes. She didn't remember walking home. The last thing she remembered was class was dismissed and she was putting on her backpack, getting ready to walk home.
How terrifying for you and for her, you know, because she's confused. Like, what yeah. are you talking about? You know, I didn't make any pizzas.
Right, I mean, right.
That's such an escalation that it would affect your daughter in that way. Did you know then, like, I've got to go. Anything I can do to protect these girls.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And like I said, we were already making preparations to leave. By January 1st, I was out of the house. And we were prepping for a Christmas party when this incident happened. And it was one of those things where I just quietly said, okay, you win. I'm out. And I took down the crucifixes. And I stopped praying. Stopped praying before we ate. Stopped making any outward sign of Catholicism or religion. And it seemed to diminish like emptying a bathtub. It just drained. All of the negative energy just seemed to go away.
Did that make you question your own faith at that point then?
It made me question everything. It made me question whether that was the objective of these malevolent things, is to break you of your faith, to separate you from the church.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that this usually just happens mostly to the Catholics. And, Mother Teresa, possessed before she passed away. And of course, the plethora of exorcisms that have been conducted. But it seems like the harder the Catholic Church fights, whatever these things are, the worse it gets.
So once you moved out, did it feel different right away in the new place, or did you still kind of...
Absolutely. Absolutely. The new place felt sterile, if that makes sense. It was sterile by comparison. Very little character, newer home, really nothing there. There was an incident about 3 months after I had moved into the newer house where I had seen a little girl in a plaid dress skipping rope, jump rope, across the hallway into my kitchen and disappear. But nothing so violent or evil intentions. Just a few apparitions here and there. Nothing major. But to answer your earlier question, I do believe that it opened me up to the paranormal happenings more. Because before, I really didn't experience anything. And after this incident, I every day here in my home right now, I still continue to experience things. And, 3 months ago, I went to my shower and I had found four bobby pins on the floor of the shower fashioned into the shape of a star. And I can't imagine where they would have come from since, I'm the only one who uses my bathroom. And, I'm a single now, divorced. I don't, have any female companions who would have been in there to put the bobby pins there.
Yeah, that's strange.
So, I continue to see bobby pins around. Trip to Reno recently, there was a bobby pin on the check-in desk at the Nugget Casino and Hotel. At a friend's house in front of the refrigerator, there's a bobby pin. Bobby pin on a freshly wiped down table. So I've experienced, I still experience the paranormal daily. There have been knocks at the door. Things move. Light switches, that's the big thing. Light switches love to flick off and turn off. So, I experience things, but they're not as mischievous or not as threatening as the others.
And what about your daughters? How are they doing now?
Good. My one daughter actually has moved back into the house after a really nasty divorce. So she lives here, the one who was either mimicked or possessed. The debate is still out there on that, whether that even was my daughter.
Right.
But she's doing well. Every once in a while, as a joke, I'll sprinkle holy water on her just to make sure. Like, Dad, what are you doing?
I really shouldn't find that funny, but I find that quite funny, actually.
It is amusing. It's funny now because she's, almost 30. And 30 years old now. And, I feel we're in a better place spiritually and physically and financially that we can, combat whatever it is. Round two, I've educated myself. There's a larger community of support. Where back in the day, there was like one company that would come out and investigate hauntings. So, with the, with the internet and social media and everything that's really grown, there's a lot more options out there for people now.
You had something at the end of the book. You said some hauntings don't end with an exorcism or a move. Some hauntings become part of you. They attach to your soul like smoke to fabric. You never wash it out. You just learn to live with it.
And I believe that.
That really resonated with me.
Yeah, you know, and that's kind of the way I feel. And it became, you know, kind of the catalyst for me to become a paranormal investigator, to explore the unexplained, to research what these things are. Well, you know, are they ghosts? Are they deceased spirits of people? Is it, energies as an alternate version of us from a different reality that's broken through? You know, we still don't know what these things are. We don't know if it's a time lapse overlay where we're kind of experiencing a thin, you know, they call it thinning the veil. Obviously, you've heard that. But, you know, when the veil is thin, we just don't know what they are.
Right.
And we don't know, you know, scientifically how they're produced or what they're capable of or where they reside or you know, when they're going to return.
Do you live in that same town or have you moved?
I do. I'm about about 1 to 3 miles away from the original
house. Do you avoid driving by that house? Because I think I would.
I do, actually. Yeah, I do. My travels take me close, but, you know, I'll drive by the cross street, but I don't even look anymore. And somehow I never look down that street. I just drive by and I don't consciously think about it when I'm in the area anymore. I just kind of drive by it and I'm like, later on, I'm like, oh yeah, I drove by that. I didn't even look.
That's good. That's very healthy.
Yeah.
It doesn't have the control it once did.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, I'm not entirely sure it wasn't attached to, you know, one of us rather than the house, because I've heard nothing of, you know, from the people who live there now, and no other reports have surfaced, and you know, these paranormal groups I've talked to haven't had any calls.
I don't know. Your wife seemed to be in a very dark place. So I don't want to blame it on her. I don't know her or anything, but it did seem like she was in a very dark place at the time.
It did seem like that. And, you know, by the time we had moved out, it was kind of left up to me to pack the entire house and move out. She was absent. She was off doing whatever she was doing. And yeah, you know, we found some notebooks with some strange writings in it and some poems from movies and some spells and, you know, some Wiccan witch work and things like that. But she had bags of crystals, you know, tucked into the windowsills of certain places and things. And she had a copy printed out of the Ritual Romano, the Catholic rite of exorcism, that she had printed out and had highlighted and circled some Latin words.
That's very strange.
There's very strange things that were going on, you know, with the papers and things that she had strewn out. And you know, she said she was helping, but it only seemed to make matters worse.
Well, and to see her watching exorcism videos on her laptop, you know, this isn't a healthy thing. I would even question anyone who watches Real Housewives, because I think that's kind of a strange thing to watch. Exorcism videos takes the cake.
Oh, absolutely. And she was fascinated with a young girl, you know, Annalise Michelle, who the exorcism was harrowing, and it did eventually kill her. It was the basis for the movie, The Exorcism of Emily Rose. And she became fascinated with the real audio, where all of her vocal cords were activated at the same time, and it sounded like a lion roaring in the background as she spoke in these Aramaic tongues. And she became fascinated with the audio clips and the sounds of it. So I'm not exactly sure what she had made audible.
Yeah, she should be taking the girls to Chuck E. Cheese. And, you know, that just...
Right.
It's not right. It's not right.
It was not right. Their obsession and fascination probably was a catalyst for this. But either way,
who really knows?
I'm now open to the paranormal. And, you know, I investigate, haunting sites. I've investigated the Winchester Mansion and the Queen Mary, you know, and several places around here in Idaho are quite haunted. So, you know, I continue my investigations and I don't have to go anywhere for a haunting. I mean, they come to me essentially.
Yeah.
It's almost a daily occurrence here where there's something that will happen. Something supernatural will happen. So yeah, people say, oh, you're a ghost hunter. I was like, well, not really. I don't really have to hunt for them. They just right. kind of find me. And sometimes it's annoying. And that's when you get to the point where I'm no longer afraid. it's just an inconvenience. It's like, really? I'm cooking dinner and you're going to turn the lights off right now? Come on. You know, it's just kind of an annoying thing, and I'll end up cursing and swearing and, you know, saying those things. But I don't go and grab my Catholic Bible. I don't go and grab rosary beads. I don't start sprinkling holy water all around, you know, and just kind of, you know, curse it out loud and, you know, move on.
And it also feels different than that house, I would guess.
Absolutely. It doesn't feel threatening. It feels more of, you know, somebody trying to communicate me from beyond the grave versus something that's trying to drive me from the home and my faith.
Now, the book is The Unholy Silence. And where's the best place for people to get it? I downloaded it onto my Kindle.
Amazon's a great source. It's available almost everywhere, internationally through Lulu. Interestingly enough, most of my book sales have been in Europe, the UK, Sweden, Denmark, those places. So it's available through Amazon, through Barnes & Noble, through Google, pretty much anywhere you purchase your books, Audible. You can find it just by Googling AuthorDougOwen.com, or you can go to AuthorDougOwen.com, my website, or just Google Author Doug Owen and The Unholy Silence, and it'll give you an option to purchase it from a myriad of different locations.
Well, Doug, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me about this. It was quite intense.
Absolutely. It's my pleasure.
And that wraps up our conversation with Doug Owen about his book, The Unholy Silence. Get more information about Doug at his website, AuthorDougOwen.com. If you'd like access to all of our episodes, including the archive and advance episodes, everything commercial free, become a Gravekeeper. Sign up at Apple Podcasts, or you can go to patreon.com/thegravetalks. I'm Carol Hughes, and for all of us here at The Grave Talks, thank you for listening.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever.
Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dix.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dix.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dix.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dix.com/scorecardplus for details. Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on 2 purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dix.com/scorecardplus for details.